travelers, and welcome to Go See, Do, Explore.
Here, we dive deep into the heart of travel, sharing hidden gems, unforgettable experiences, and the stories that make each destination unique.
Whether you're a seasoned traveler or dreaming of your next getaway, you're in the right place to get inspired.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley.
And together, we'll set the course for your next great adventure and discover the stories that make each place unforgettable.
It's time to go, see, and do more. Let's explore.
Hello, we're here for another episode of Go, See, Do, Explore. And we're just back from a trip we took out to San Francisco area on Amtrak. If you listen to our last podcast, we recorded a podcast right from that train. But here today, we're going to be talking more about our experience on that train, as well as Amtrak in general. So we thought it would be good to start just by talking a little bit about what Amtrak is, because you probably have heard of Amtrak, but you may or may not know really exactly what all Amtrak is today.
I feel like a lot of people are familiar with Amtrak, but they've never ridden it or considered riding Amtrak, except maybe the like short distance, local, regional kind of stuff. Yeah. I feel like the average American traveler doesn't really consider Amtrak for travel. I guess we wanted to shed some light on what Amtrak is and why we decided ultimately to take a cross-country train vacation.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit here about what Amtrak is. Technically, the true company name of Amtrak is the National Passenger Rail Corporation. It is a publicly traded for-profit company, which I think sometimes surprises people because of its associations with the federal government. People think it's a government service. It's not. It's just funded by the government and has both... What?
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with you. I just think that's really strange.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a government service. It's just paid for by the government. Anyway, right. Continue.
It's not. It's just funded by the government, by both the federal and state governments. It also has the United States Secretary of Transportation as a permanent member of its board of directors. So it's an unusual situation in the United States. Lots of countries subsidize their public transit. That's totally normal. But the United States tends to not have publicly traded corporations receiving subsidies in this way with a sort of a public-private partnership mix. It's a little bit unusual, and there's been a lot of controversy over the years about whether this is an effective model or not. We're not really going to dive deep on that. We're just going to tell you about what it's like as passengers and what you can expect.
I want to say that when we think about European rail travel, it's typically inexpensive, frequent, and fast.
Yeah, and well-connected.
Connected, and that's not Amtrak.
No, and there are lots of reasons for that.
We don't need to get into it. It's just, if you are not from the United States and you are looking to come to the U.S. and see it by train, just be aware that it is not what you're used to back home.
Yeah. So Amtrak has many different kinds of routes. What we're going to talk about mainly today are what are referred to as the long-haul routes, the Western routes. There are a bunch of these routes that originate primarily in Chicago and then head to points west. And these are a type of route that Amtrak has that run on freight rail. And there are restrictions, there are laws that make it so that Amtrak really is stuck in this arrangement. They're not able to build their own rail on these routes. They have to continue to run on the freight rail and essentially be subservient to the freight schedules and all that, which is part of the problems that these routes face. But these are really old and really scenic routes and really interesting routes if you're a traveler and want to see this part of the country.
So probably one of the most popular of the long-haul Western routes is the California Zephyr, which goes from Chicago to Emeryville, which is near San Francisco. We're not going to talk about that too much right now because we'll get to that later in the episode. There's also the Southwest Chief, which goes from Chicago to Los Angeles. There is the Empire Builder, which goes from Chicago to Seattle.
Seattle or Portland, it splits. Yeah.
and then the Texas Eagle, which I really like the name of that one, mm-hmm. that goes from Chicago and it to Texas. Where does it go? And then it continues to on to LA. Yeah. But where in Texas would be the end?
San Antonio. The train waits for a while and some of the train goes on to LA. Some of the train does not. They split it up. And then that's also another route, which is, I can't remember, the Sunset Limited, I think, is the name of that route.
So when you're doing a long haul train in the United States, you have a few kind of class options. The first is coach class. And on the side of the train, that is literally one word. So I'm going to say
coach class.
I'm going to say it as fast as I can. Coach class, which is the typical kind of like airline seat where you.
Yeah, it's nicer than an airline seat.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you're right. A little bit more space.
It's bigger. Spacious. It's only two seats on each side of the aisle. Right. Yeah, it's nicer than an airline seat.
But it's what you think of when you think of a train seat.
Yeah. It's a seat.
It's a seat. You have a seat.
A tray.
A tray table.
And maybe a window.
Maybe a window if you're lucky. And then the first class sleeper car accommodations range from roomettes, which span half of the car, to bedrooms, family bedrooms, and the accessible bedroom cabins, which take up the whole width of the car.
Yeah. So the roomette is for one or two people. It is two chairs that face each other, and then it folds down into a one bed, and then there's a second bed that kind of folds down from the wall. And
kind of like a bunk bed.
Yeah, you have a bunk bed situation. We'll talk more about sleeping and all that in a minute. But there's also then a bedroom, which is the bottom is sort of a futon-y kind of chair bed. It's a couch, I guess. And then that folds into probably roughly a double. And then that also has a second roughly twin size bed that comes down from the wall. I don't know what the max number of people on that room is, if it's two or if it's three. I don't know. And then there are the family bedrooms, which is a combination of these types of furniture that allow you to get, I don't think you would really have four adult-sized people in there, but you could certainly have two adults and two smaller children. It would be tight, but that's what it's for.
And the roomette was tight. Like, we'd watch some videos in advance, and then I walked in, and I was just like, oh, this is it.
Yeah. It's very comfortable, though, when you're sitting, like when you're not moving, it's fine. It's actually, I would say more than fine, really nice. But yeah, the second you have to check your bag for something or look around or something, it's
try to change your clothes.
It's a little tight. It's a little tight. It's all right.
Oh, and sleeper car passengers do have access to a shower that coach passengers don't. I feel like that is something that makes traveling long distance in coach very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the bedrooms have small bathrooms in them. The roomettes do not. The roomettes, you have to use one of the common bathrooms.
So when you're paying for a first class sleeper cabin, that includes more than just your bed / chairs that turns into a bed at night. You're also paying for the food. The sleeper fares include the meals in the dining car, or you can choose to have it delivered to your room as well. But that's breakfast, lunch, and a formal dinner, three-course dinner that includes an alcoholic beverage, which if you are a coach passenger, you can add on the food options as well. And I thought it was important to mention that because this is not something that I found on the internet at all before our trip. Breakfast costs $20 for coach, $25 for lunch, and $45 for dinner, but is included, like I said, for the sleeper passengers.
One thing to note, too, when you're booking these different classes of fares is if you're booking the sleepers where food is included and you're sharing a space, if you book, let's say, a roomette for two people, it's not twice the price of booking for one person. And this makes sense because whether you're one person or two people, you're occupying one roomette. You'll probably be a little bit sticker shocked if you haven't looked at the prices of these. But when you add the second person, it doesn't double, which is nice. And then if you have a family of three or four that you're going to use a family bedroom for, likewise, you are paying for that space and then you're just adding on. What you're adding on for primarily is meals.
The first class cabins also include the use of the Metropolitan Lounge at the Amtrak Union Station in Chicago, which was really nice. Kind of a two-story lounge with snacks, and they had free luggage storage, which I didn't realize was included if you are in a sleeper car. Yeah, it was a really nice place to hang out. The Wi-Fi was subpar where we were anyway, yeah. But it was a nice little break.
Yeah, and we should mention that no matter where you start, if you're starting at an Amtrak station that has a lounge as a sleeper passenger, you would get to use it. It would be at any station that has that. So if you're taking some of this route, you don't have to take the whole thing, or if you're starting on the West Coast.
That's true.
Likewise. So that's an overview of the trains that are on the Western routes for Amtrak. They're sometimes you'll see them referred to as superliners. They're two-story trains. It's cool. You enter on the bottom, but they're connected on the top, and so you walk through the train on the top. In addition to the sleeper cars and the dining car, which we mentioned, they also have an observation car, which is mainly a glass car where you can look out at the scenery that you're running through. And then downstairs in the observation car is the cafe, which is where you can buy food at pretty much any time. Or also, if you're in coach, that's where you can buy your food if you don't want to pay for the dining car. And then coach class in the back of the train.
I feel like you should mention, too, that the observation car is open to anyone in coach or in a sleeper car.
So that's a picture of what these trains look like that run west. And so now it's time for our wine break.
Wine break.
Okay, we're here for the wine break. We've got wine from a place today that you might not be expecting. Not exactly a wine capital of the world, but one that you should know about. So today we have Red Door from Door 44 Winery in Wisconsin. What? Wisconsin? Really? Aren't they known for cheese? So they do also have some great production on the Door Peninsula, and that's why this is called Door 44 and Red Door. The Door Peninsula is a part of Wisconsin that sticks into Lake Michigan. They think it's a thumb because they think their state looks like a mitten.
You're going to insult all the Wisconsinites.
Anyway, yes. This is a pretty good wine. We went to the Door Peninsula a couple years ago in the summer. We wanted to check it out. We'd always wanted to go. And we had a good time there. We camped and saw the sights and all that. But we did actually a tour of a few wineries. We were surprised to find wineries there. But it makes sense. It's been a similar situation to where Michigan's wineries are. They have less production than Michigan, and they bring in a lot more grapes and bring in a lot more juice from other regions like California. These wineries do. But Door 44 does grow their own grapes. I don't know, because it doesn't say here, how much of this particular wine is Wisconsin grapes versus potentially fruit from other places like California. I don't know. But it's a very good wine, and I have a really nice memory of sitting out in the sun, warm late July day, drinking this wine. And so we found it when we were quickly in Wisconsin last fall, and I said, let's buy that bottle and see if it's good. And it is. Sometimes you have a wine memory that you're happy about the wine, but it's not because the wine is particularly good necessarily. It's just because you were having a good time, right? But no, this one, I was worried that maybe that was what this was. But no, this is a nice red wine, a very fruity, really good aroma. It smells to me a little bit like a homemade wine, or like an unfiltered natural wine. It's got a little bit of that kind of yeasty smell, but not in a bad way by any means. Really nice. So yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, it's very fruity. We picked up this bottle at the Mars Cheese Castle.
Oh yes, that was where we found this. Mars Cheese Castle, probably a conversation for another time, but
yeah.
It's quite the place. 12.1% alcohol. So solidly medium alcohol, but really like easy drinking, kind of nice table wine. So from Wisconsin, yeah. You wouldn't know, but yes. Door 44. All right, we're back from our wine break. We're going to talk a little bit more about the California Zephyr, about the route, about our experience, and about some things we learned about the positives and negatives of taking the train in this way. And let's talk first about the California Zephyr itself. Like we said, it goes from Chicago to Emeryville. Emeryville is a suburb of Oakland. It's just across the bay from San Francisco. and it is an old route. This route started in 1936. It's had many different names. It's been called the California Zephyr. It's been called the San Francisco Zephyr. It's been called the City of San Francisco. It's been a bunch more names. But California Zephyr itself is an old name, one of the first, and it has been in its current form as the California Zephyr under Amtrak since 1983. The trip takes about 2.5 days. It's 51.5 hours if it's not delayed, but it's pretty much always delayed for the reasons we discussed before, the freight rail and things of that nature. We can talk about why we were delayed in a little bit. But it's a really scenic route. I think arguably the most scenic route that Amtrak has. It runs through the Rocky Mountains and the upper Colorado River in Colorado, including Glenwood Canyon and Ruby Canyon. It runs through the Sierra Nevada in California, through Truckee, Donner Pass, Donner Lake, and then down into Sacramento. It runs through many tunnels and bridges, including the Moffett Tunnel, which is the highest point in the Amtrak system.
And what was it, 10 minutes of darkness?
Yeah, it was a long time. The cities that you run through are Chicago, Omaha, Denver, Salt Lake City, Reno, and then Emeryville at the end. It's also really historically significant that the portion between Elko, Nevada and Sacramento, California is the original transcontinental route, what is sometimes referred to as the overland route. Obviously, all that track has been replaced, but the handmade grade that the original laborers of the Transcontinental Railroad made is still the grade of this route between Elko and San Francisco. So historically, it's really interesting, too. Not only is that very scenic, but you can really appreciate how challenging it was and how in many ways, how dangerous it was for the people who built that route originally. Another thing to know about the California Zephyr, if you are at all familiar with the Rocky Mountaineer, this private luxury tourist train that originated in Canada and still runs in Canada, but now also runs in the U.S. as well, is that the U.S. route is actually on the same track as the Zephyr through Colorado and Utah, I believe. And so that's the level of scenery that you can expect on this train. Of course, the Rocky Mountaineer is much more optimized for the experience, but you still see all of that scenery on, or at least the during daylight, you see all of that on Amtrak. So it's a really scenic and fun route to ride.
I guess that's the perk of the Rocky Mountaineer, though, is that they... Not that this is the Rocky Mountaineer episode, but that they pick the times that you're going through those places to optimize the light and whatnot, and then you stay in hotels overnight.
Yeah, that's the main difference, because Amtrak also tries to time it, but there are certain things that just happen at night, like the Great Salt Lake and a lot of Utah happens at night. This was the route that we did.
Yeah, I feel like you knew a lot more about this than I did.
Thanks to YouTube.
Going into it. I did watch three different YouTube videos.
Was it only two? Yeah.
about this experience before we did it. And it was a really fun experience. I know when I've told a lot of people that I know from work, they're like, you did what? Yeah. Why would you take a train? And then obviously, oh, it's really scenic. And like, they get it. But it's like, I've never heard of anyone doing this.
Yeah, I feel like I also got strong reactions, either, wow, that sounds really cool, or why on earth would you do that? There wasn't a lot of middle ground.
So I mentioned that based on the two YouTube videos or three YouTube videos that I watched, I was very surprised how small the roomette was. We alternated who got to sleep on the top bunk. And I got the top bunk the first night, and I had a really hard time sleeping. The top bunk, there's no window, and it's just dark, but not that dark, because then there's a light in the hallway, and the train moved so much, so I had a hard time sleeping the first night, but luckily I was so tired that the second night I slept much better.
Yeah, the second night you slept down.
Yes, the second night I got the bottom bunk, if you will, and I definitely slept better down there, but that could have also just been because I was so tired that I passed out faster.
Yeah, I was surprised that they didn't turn down or dim the light in the hallway. I had really wished that I had brought an eye mask. I guess we can talk more when we talk about tips for that. But I didn't have as much of a hard time sleeping. I tend to be a good sleeper pretty much in any situation. I woke up a lot in the middle of the night, of course, because it was very bumpy. but that didn't really lead to me feeling tired during the day. So it was all right. It's not the greatest sleep I've ever had, but it was fine.
It led to me at 9 o'clock being like, Greg, I need you to put my bed down right now. I'm exhausted.
9 p.m. Yeah.
9 p.m. No, no, I did not stay up late that first night in the slightest.
But apart from the sleeping, which was one aspect of this, let's talk about other aspects of the experience.
I thought the food was really good. The menu was a little, especially for dinner, I felt like the menu was a little small, but they have to make it on train car, so I get that.
Yeah.
There were two options, I think, for vegans. One fish, chicken, and a steak. If you are a meat eater, I felt like your options were a little limited. But once again, for two nights, it wasn't that big of a deal. I had steak one night. I had chicken one night.
The fish option was Atlantic salmon, which is a garbage fish that's terrible for the environment and no one should eat. And so that really is a bummer, I think, too, because if you wanted to have fish one night, just Atlantic salmon is not a sustainable choice. It's not something that people should be eating. They should be eating Pacific salmon that's wild caught. And they should have that on Amtrak if they're going to have, or they should have some other fish, have some other fish that is an okay choice.
You thought that breakfast was your favorite
meal. Breakfast was my favorite meal. And I had the breakfast quesadilla both days, so I didn't even really try different things. No. But it was just really solid. It was really good. The portion was nice. And
yeah, it was a big portion. I only ate 2/3 of it or something.
Yeah.
And then lunch, I had the burger both days. So
lunch, yeah. And lunch was fine, too. My Monte Cristo didn't have jam, which was maybe a mistake. The power was out.
There were some issues at that lunch that may have led to that.
So, of course, being on a train, it's not like you're going to have really super high expectations. But I would say in that context, the food was really awesome.
Uh-huh.
It was good food. It really was. And we're not people that really complain about food, but it was good overall, just with those kind of minor grumblings.
We left Chicago on time,
mm-hmm.
and we got to Denver early, actually.
Which Denver is the next morning is when you typically, you get in at, I think you're scheduled to get in at 7 a.m.
And we got in at 6:30.
Something like that, yeah.
So we had something like an hour and a half in Denver. So we actually left the train and wandered around downtown for a little bit, which was cool because this was the first checking off a new state for us. So we can actually say that we've been to Colorado. We walked around Colorado a little bit. We actually spent quite a lot of time in Colorado because we were making really good time. We left Denver and we stopped at Winter Park. And then the next stop is Granby. And they tell us 30-second stop, not a fresh air break. Everybody stay on the train. And then a few minutes later, they come on and they say, okay, we're troubleshooting some issues with the engine. It's a fresh air break. Get off the train. You can walk around. And then we ended up sitting there 2.5 hours. But at one point, then they were testing the engine. So we moved away from the station and we were stuck on the train at that point.
I guess what had happened was there was some initial issue. And because the train has two engines, keep in mind. With one of the engines, there was some initial issue and they had resolved it. And so we left the station, but then they got a bunch of error codes that they didn't understand. It's like when you have your car and the check engine light comes on and you're just kind of like, I don't really know what's going on. They were able to leave it because there are two engines on that train. They're necessary for the ascent in the Rockies, which we had already done. And they're necessary for the ascent in the Sierras, which wouldn't be for another day. So they were okay just to simply leave the engine, but they have to drive both engines up to where there is siding, and then they have to drop the one off and come back. So we were there for kind of a while they were doing that too.
The big downside with that issue was that when they took the engines away, there was no power. And it wasn't hot in Colorado at that time, but it was our slot in the observation car. So we're sitting in the observation car and just baking in the sun and there's no air conditioning. So like you mentioned with the eye mask, I'm really glad that we had our little battery powered fans. They were a lifesaver in that moment.
Yeah.
But eventually they did drop off the defective engine and we got to continue on. And then we were delayed a little bit again in Grand Junction because we were picking up a new engine. And it was really funny. We got to get out of the train and we watched them connecting the Union Pacific engine to the Amtrak train, which was pretty funny.
We had a loaner.
Yeah, we got a loaner engine to get us through the Sierras.
Yeah. I will say, though, just to put it all in context, we were delayed. I know it doesn't sound great, but if you think about or like the experience we had in that delay relative to what it's like to sit on a plane on a tarmac when there's some kind of plane delay. Yes, it got hot and that wasn't great, but we were able to go to the dining car and get food. We were able to go back to our roomette, close the curtains so it didn't get too hot, and then read or whatever. Like, it was pretty comfortable overall. It's a little hot, definitely.
Yeah, I would say overall that 3-hour delay was less painful than that 1 hour we were stuck on the tarmac later in the trip.
Yeah.
We got our time in the observation car, so we got to see, what is that area called?
Glenwood Canyon?
Yeah, we got to see Glenwood Canyon.
Upper and lower.
The upper and the lower canyons.
Yeah.
The sun started to go down and we crossed into Utah and then it was time to go to bed. Once again, another new state, which some people probably say it doesn't count because I took one picture and then went to sleep and woke up in Nevada. I say it counts.
Yeah. Utah, I'd say of all the states, really Utah and Nebraska were the ones that kind of got short shrift because we didn't get off the train in either of those. Would have loved to seen, in Utah, you go through Red Rocks and you go right alongside the Great Salt Lake, but all that happens overnight. Unless your train is very delayed, you're not going to see that stuff during the day. I guess we got to go back to Utah.
Yeah. I do really want to go see the Mighty Five, the Big Five National Parks in Utah at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, then we woke up in the morning in Nevada.
Right in the desert. There's, was it like the 40-mile desert or something? It's a famous desert in Nevada, in the middle of nowhere, pretty much. Not far from I-80, but yeah, I'm just surrounded by mountains in this flat, deserty thing alongside a river. Really cool.
Is that where they mooned us? Was it Nevada?
No, that was Ruby Canyon before we entered Utah.
Okay. Yeah, that was, they call it Moon River. They do call it Moon River. It Moon River.
But it's Ruby Canyon.
And then a little while later in Nevada, we got a fresh air break. We got to step out of the train and
Winnemucca.
Sniff. Oh, Winnemucca. I was thinking Reno. Reno was after Winnemucca.
Oh, yeah. We had Winnemucca first.
Oh, yeah. Winnemucca. It was like freezing rain or something really disgusting.
It was disgusting.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, I can say I've been in Winnemucca.
We stood there for, I don't know, 45 seconds and then got back in.
And then Reno was the next fresh air break. And there were a lot of people getting on at Reno. But it was interesting because it was in like a...
It's like a ditch.
Yeah, it's like in a ditch. So there's just high walls on both sides of you. There is the train station. There is two levels. So the train is obviously on the first level and then the street is on the second level. And they kept saying, do not go up to street level. We will leave you behind. So we got to see the ditch of Reno, Nevada.
Yeah, you can imagine how devastating it would be, though, if you got off the train for a fresh air break and then the train left with all of your stuff. Hopefully you have your phone at least, but right. Yeah, that would be horrible.
No, I don't think I had my ID on me, so yeah. Mm,
yeah, so don't get too far from the train on those short, fresh air breaks.
Right.
Yeah, from there we went into the Sierra Nevada following the Truckee River through Truckee and then up around Donner Lake, which I got some pretty cool video of. It was really snowy when we were through there. It was really awesome. And then you come down through, I don't know, Colfax and then to Sacramento.
And then everybody gets off the train except for the six people.
Yeah, it's interesting. Once you get over the Sierras, you really start to see the train empty out in those, I don't know, half dozen stops or so between Colfax and Emeryville. And yeah, it gets lighter and lighter in terms of the number of people on board. And you see the staff cleaning up and getting ready because they don't have a long time before the next train in the other direction. I really enjoyed not only the Sierras, I really enjoyed, but I also really enjoyed that final stretch of the train as you're getting into what is really interesting kind of agricultural land between Sacramento and Emeryville, like around Davis, where UC Davis is, where they have all that agriculture and Martinez. And yeah, just seeing like all of the fields and the Blue Diamond Almond Factory. And it's not what I think of when I think of California. And it really reminds you how important California is as an agricultural state. It's just not something I think as people who live closer to the east side of the country, we think more of California, I think, as the big cities and then the big national parks.
But beach.
Beach, right. But there's a lot of agriculture there too, important agriculture. And it was cool to see it very picturesque. You understand why the land values are so high there. And then we arrived in Emeryville. That was...
It was really a good trip. It was very scenic. The thing I've said to when people have asked me, like, what I thought of the train is that I was glad it was only 2.5 days. It was enjoyable, but it's just a lot of sitting. And it's I think if sitting. It was a longer trip, you would go a little crazy not having anywhere to go.
Yeah.
And our roomette, our car was just one car off of the dining car, which was one car off of the observation car. So we pretty much never walked more than two cars to get anywhere. And it's just, yeah, a lot of sitting. And I, like I've said before, I'm a teacher. I stand most of the day. I don't do well in sitting situations for long periods of time.
Yeah. And you could walk the train if you wanted to. You just walk up and down. I know I had heard this before we went, so I wasn't that surprised, but it seems like the kind of thing where it would be really easy to get bored. But honestly, at least on that route, there are so many interesting things to see. And there are also, with the dining and things like that, it really, we didn't get bored. We didn't feel like, oh, there's nothing to do. And it's a nice thing to do, actually, to be able to disconnect. There's no Wi-Fi on these routes. There's decent cell signal probably half the time, but we didn't do a lot of internet browsing or anything like that. We just were able to look out the window and chat and go to the dining car and go to the observation car and look out the window and chat. And like, it was just really nice. I don't know. I would do longer routes. I would have no problem with that, I think.
It was definitely a cool way to see the country.
Yeah.
In a way that a lot of people don't.
It is your trip. Right. It's more than just like when you fly, usually you're flying just to get somewhere. This is definitely at least part of your trip. If not, I think for us, we tacked on a couple days in San Francisco because it made sense to and because there were things we wanted to do out there, of course. But I think the train was really the main point of this trip.
I was worried in advance because we're both introverts. I don't know if we've mentioned that before. I don't think we have. And I was nervous about the communal dining in advance.
Yeah.
Like some bad cruise ship experiences, communal dining.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't bad. It was unlike on a cruise ship. It was different people every time you went into the dining car. And so it was fun getting to know most of the people. And
yeah,
most of them were good talking to about their travels and where they're going, where they're coming from. And that was enjoyable. It surprised me.
Yeah, you get a lot of travelers on the train, mm-hmm. which so we had something in common. And then I felt compared to cruising, people were more low key and just I guess train is a different experience. Right. And yeah, it was just really easy. Mm-hmm. It was not a problem. A couple awkward moments, but nothing horrible. So let's talk a little bit about our overall positives and negatives for traveling by train, taking one of these Western routes. I would say one positive is that it's a really comfortable mode of travel. It's time consuming, but it's really comfortable and enjoyable and relaxing. I would say that's one positive. I don't know, another positive.
You just get to see the country without having to do anything. We love road trips. And yeah. I love a good road trip, but you always have to drive.
Which I like driving, but yeah, I think that's a good comparison. It's you get a lot of the benefits of the road trip, but you don't really have to do anything. You don't have to worry about where you're going to sleep. You don't have to worry about where you're going to eat. Like you get to enjoy the road trip without actually having to do anything. You fall asleep and you wake up and where you're supposed to be. And it's,
wake up and you're in Nevada.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one negative, unfortunately, is the cost. It is not a cost-effective method of travel. You could probably fly back and forth from Chicago to San Francisco four times and pay for the sleeper. Now, the coach actually is really not bad. It probably is still more than a plane ticket. But then you have to sit in a coach seat for 2.5 days, right? Whereas with a plane, you get there. If you're looking for the most economical way of traveling, this is not it. However, as we mentioned, I think it offers other things that can offset that. Any other negatives?
Just the fact that it's very often delayed and sometimes significantly delayed. We only had 3.5 hours, which is not bad at all. But we watched one video, what were they, like 16 hours delayed or something crazy like that? You can't take a trip like this expecting to get somewhere by a certain time. You have to have a little bit of flexibility built in. If you're going for an event, build in an extra day or two.
Yeah. Would we do this again? Yeah, I want to do it right now. It was so much fun. It's not something that I think I could bake into every trip, but I definitely just had a lot of fun. It was very relaxing and easy. And yeah, I don't know. You're going to do it again because...
I enjoyed it, but just like I said, it's just a lot of sitting for me. Like, even on a cruise ship, when you're sitting, and I enjoy reading when we're traveling or whatever, so I don't mind sitting and reading, but then there's, you can get up and you can walk the deck on a cruise ship. On the train, there just wasn't there many places to go. I think it'd be really cool, and probably will never happen, but if they added, like, a gym car with...
Yeah, just a track that's just, like, a linear track.
Or just like a big, a car that's just a treadmill. What, so you're just walking.
What if you could walk the roofs?
There you go.
Yeah. That pretty much sums up our experience on the California Zephyr. We wanted to give a couple of tips for you in case you're interested in traveling overnight on Amtrak. What's your first tip?
The biggest thing, and we didn't have a bedroom, so it might be a little different if you do have a full bedroom. But in the roomette, you need to be very limited in what luggage that you're bringing. We each had our personal item backpacks, and that was pushing it, I feel like. And within that bag, I know you said you wished that you had done a little bit more organization.
Yeah, I had a lot of electronics and just small items because we're also doing some filming. And so I had batteries and things like that, and I wish I had just a couple of small bags that I could have put, like, oh, all my batteries are in here and my hard drive is in here and, like, some things like that, because I just had a lot of that stuff loose in my backpack and it got really chaotic to find things.
And when you dropped something that seat, it was a pain.
There was so much disgusting stuff under that seat. Oh my gosh.
That shirt that didn't belong to either of us.
Yeah, look out. Yeah. I would say my number one tip is the eye mask. I have an eye mask that I use for flights, overnight flights. It's like, my flights are during the day on this trip. I don't need to bring that. And they don't dim the light. You have a curtain in your roomette, but they don't dim the light in the hallway. And that curtain is not blackout. I really wish I would have had that eye mask and I didn't.
Another tip is that there's only one outlet in the room. And so we had like a USB power bank. But even that was in an awkward place. So I wished we would have had a little, like, extension cord or, like, a surge protector that's a little... If only you could see the hand gesture that I'm doing. Just something that got that USB power bank away from where my elbow was. Because I just kept knocking it out.
It's right. It's, like, maybe... It's around your shoulder if you're in that seat. It's a little bit above your shoulder, but it's by your shoulder. And that's the only one in the room. And it's a pretty well-worn outlet, so it doesn't really hold very well.
And anytime I moved, everything just went flying out.
Yeah. So just be aware of that. The only one outlet. We were underprepared for that, too, surprisingly. We were normally pretty good about that stuff, but I guess I didn't realize.
And then I mentioned before, it got hot. Even in the roomette, even when the power was on. So that little battery-powered fan was a lifesaver.
Yeah, we have these little battery fans that were good, although I kept chopping my hands with mine overnight. It doesn't have a blade guard, and it's just like foam blade, so it's fine, right? But I kept hitting it.
And waking up to whack.
It was good. But, I have one more tip that we didn't put in the notes, but I'll share it. If you're going to bid, we did the bidding where we bid for an upgrade to a regular bedroom. But I had used my debit card, which thinks that pretty much anything is fraud. But we actually got the bid for the bedroom, but then our credit union flagged it as fraud, and that was it. So we ended up in the roomette. We could have been in the bedroom. Yeah, maybe use a travel credit card or something that's not so sensitive to thinking that maybe booking a bedroom on Amtrak is fraud. Yeah, I guess the other thing I would say is just if you have any kind of sleep hygiene things that are helpful to you, just think in advance on that. Having certain clothes or whatever you need to help you sleep, the need for that is going to be heightened on the train. There's just a lot going on. There's light and noise and a lot of motion.
A lot of motion. There were some moments where I thought we jumped the tracks.
So that was our experience on the California Zephyr and some tips that would hopefully be helpful for you should you take a trip like we did. Done for this episode, but before we do that, we want to give you our travel tip. And our travel tip for our episode is this: always be charging. ABC, always be charging. This is an old tip of mine that I've given out for a long time, But yeah, what do we mean? Because it seems obvious, right? But what do we mean by always be charging?
Your first tip is the morning of a travel day is to put your phone into low power mode.
Yeah, and I don't know how this works for Android, but on iOS, there's that low power mode. And it does some things that reduces the power the phone uses. I always do that the morning of travel because I know that my phone won't be on the charger all day. And so it just makes sure that I have a good shot at having a pretty decent phone battery when I get on, when I start traveling.
And then to make sure that you always have a charger with you, both the cord and the wall block.
Yeah. So I have one that is USB-A on one end to plug in. It's like the old style USB if you're not a nerd like me. And then on the other end, it's got a micro USB, it's got a lightning, and it's got a USB-C. And so I can use that with any of the devices I carry. And sometimes I'll bring extra cords, but the one that I'll have accessible while I'm traveling, and especially while I'm flying, is just that one because it'll charge whenever I need to.
And then also have a wall block charger thingy, the part that goes into the wall. I'm sure the technical term for that.
And then the other thing I'll always have at least one of, but usually multiples, is some sort of a battery bank that I can plug a USB into. I, especially now that we're recording and filming and all this stuff, I usually have a couple of them. And we both have backpacks that have like a pass-through cable where you plug the battery back up into your bag on the inside of your bag, and then there's a little USB port on the side of the bag. I highly recommend that. I think it's really great that you don't have to dig and find your battery backup. And then the worst thing with battery backups is like walking around the airport or whatever with the battery backup in your pocket and the phone in your pocket and a cable like hanging down at your side. Like just to have it very cleanly in the bag and just be able to essentially plug your phone or whatever into your bag is really good. That's really good.
And they make charger cases, too, if you want to cut out the extra little device.
That's true. But having some means of giving your phone extra power or whatever device, I like to use those. Even a lot of times, a lot of planes have plugs or whatever, but I just find it sometimes easier to use the battery if I have it because the plug might be in an inconvenient place.
But then when you are, like when we were at the airport the other day, I did plug into the seat because it's there. So that way you're not wearing down your battery backup.
Yeah. Another thing I'll recommend as a cybersecurity information security tip to always be charging is try to have a charger, especially for your phone, try to have a charger that is power only and not data, because in theory, someone could use those USB ports you're plugging into to do malicious things. I don't know how likely it is or how common it is, but yeah, having a cable that's just power only basically eliminates that possibility.
I've never thought about that before.
Yeah, I think about cybersecurity all the time. And I guess the last thing I'll say about always be charging is always be charging starts the morning of your travel, if not the night before, probably the night before. And it continues while you're traveling, right? So it's the kind of thing where if you see the opportunity to charge up a little bit, take it, because maybe everyone's different here. But for me, my phone in particular is my means of boarding an airplane. Usually it's my means of getting a ride from the airport. It's my means of knowing where I am in a city that I'm not that familiar with. And it's also secondarily to all those very important things, it's also usually my primary means of entertainment on the plane and communication and things like that. And so just I always make sure I take the opportunity to make sure the battery is not going to die while I'm traveling. And that's why I say ABC, always be charging. That's all for today's episode of Go See, Do, Explore. Thank you for joining us and sharing in the wonder of travel.
Keep the spirit of today's adventure alive by checking out our blog at goseedoexplore.com for even more travel inspiration.
Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps fellow travelers find us and join our community.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep dreaming, and keep traveling by any means necessary.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley, bidding you farewell and happy exploring.